Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
U.S. lawmakers prepare to hear a direct appeal from Ukraine's president for more arms, plus the economic blacklisting of Russia further dents hopes of globalization.
It's really a big blow to that kind of dream that you could just freely trade with everyone and that it would be something that kind of induces a more peaceful world.
And Chinese stocks continue a steep, multi-day slide. What's dragging them down? It's Tuesday, March 15th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky will directly appeal to members of the U.S. Congress for additional military gear in video remarks on Wednesday morning. His remarks will be distributed to television networks, giving him a platform to address the American public. Sources say Zelensky is expected to call for help obtaining equipment to bolster Ukraine's ground-based air defense systems. Meanwhile, leaders from Poland, the Czech Republic, and Slovenia, all members of the European Union and NATO, are headed to Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, to meet Ukrainian leaders. Delegation members said they plan to offer a broad package of support for Ukraine. Czech Prime Minister Petr Fiala tweeted that the group is visiting as representatives of the European Council. The U.S. has pressed China over its alignment with Russia. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan met with a top Chinese official on Monday in a seven-hour meeting that officials described as intense and that included discussion of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said China would face significant consequences from the U.S. and its allies if it took up a reported Russian request for economic and military help in its war.
If China were to decide to be an economic provider or to take additional steps there to Russia, they only make up 15% or 15 to 20% of the world's economy. The G7 countries make up more than 50%. So there are a range of tools at our disposal in coordination with our European partners should we need to use them.
We are exclusively reporting that Apple supplier Foxconn is in talks with Saudi Arabia to jointly build a $9 billion factory in the kingdom, according to sources. The multi-purpose facility could make microchips, electronic vehicle components, and other electronics. The Taiwan-based company has been looking to broaden its business offerings beyond Apple products. Sources say Foxconn is also in talks with the United Arab Emirates to potentially site the project there. Saudi authorities and Foxconn didn't respond to requests for comment. Nickel trading resumed today at the London Metal Exchange after the commodity experienced an unprecedented price surge last week, causing regulators to suspend trading for six sessions. WSJ commodities reporter Joe Wallace says regulators are implementing guardrails for nickel and several other metals to try and quell volatility in trading.
The nickel session will be shortened. There'll be a new daily price limit for nickel of 5% in either direction. Brokers that act as intermediaries between companies will be required to share more information with the exchange about their clients and their positions. The NME is also imposing a 15% price move limit in other metals.
And S&P 500 companies are unveiling plans to repurchase their own shares at a record pace this year, lending support to the battered stock market. Analysts with Goldman Sachs recently raised their 2022 buyback forecast to a record $1 trillion. That would represent a 12% increase from last year, when repurchase activity helped propel the S&P 500 to a 27% gain. The analysts said the breadth of buyback activity is near a historic high, with the number of active buyback programs double the typical figure. China's economy got off to a racing start this year as factories churned out more goods and consumers dug deeper into their wallets, even exceeding analysts' expectations. But despite that, Chinese stocks are sliding. Hong Kong's flagship Hang Seng Index has fallen to its lowest level since 2016, and on Monday, its tech index saw its biggest one-day percentage decline since it was introduced in 2020. Chinese firms listed on the Nasdaq haven't been doing well either. So what's causing this? Journal reporter Dave Sebastian joins us now from Hong Kong with the latest. Hey, Dave.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you. What is causing the Hang Seng and other Chinese consumer-facing companies to drop so much?
Yeah, this sell-off in Chinese equities has been pretty noticeable since late last week, and several major factors come into play. We've got China's recent surge in COVID cases that has led to COVID restrictions in cities like Shenzhen, which is a city in southern China where companies like Huawei are based. And with that, we've seen shares in Chinese consumer-facing companies dropping sharply. And then we've also got China's crackdown on its homegrown tech companies over the past year that has caused concerns among investors. For example, The Wall Street Journal this week reported that Tencent was facing a possible record fine from China's central bank for violations of some regulations by its WeChat Pay mobile network.
Right, and it goes beyond that with the Chinese government imposing new rules on food delivery companies like Meituan last month. So this is pretty all-encompassing. And Dave, beyond that, there are some international factors driving some of these Chinese companies down too. Is that right?
That's right. So we've got a move by the SEC in the U.S. to provisionally name five China-based companies whose audit papers it can't inspect. And that's a potential prelude to the delisting of these companies. And at the same time, you know, around the world, we're seeing volatility in markets because of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And so that's obviously also part of what's going on here.
And help us put this in context. Today, China reported strong economic data, both industrial output and retail spending. Why is that not enough to boost these stocks? Everything from companies in tech to restaurant groups to casino operators, property developers.
Yeah, so we saw today that industrial output in China jumped 7.5% during the first 2 months from a year ago. But at the same time, stock markets tend to respond to a lot more than just economic data. And we've got those other factors that we talked about earlier, from the regulations in China to the war in Ukraine, that have been pressuring Chinese stocks.
That was Journal reporter Dave Sebastian joining us from Hong Kong. Dave, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Coming up, has Russia's recent economic isolation at the hands of the U.S. and its allies dealt a blow for globalization and the ideal it's still worth trading with adversaries in the hope of one day reaching common ground? And if so, what could global trade look like if that trend continues? We've got that story after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
The blacklisting of Russia's economy by the U.S. and its allies since the invasion of Ukraine has been swift and punishing. Wall Street Journal international trade reporter Josh Zumbrun writes that these events mark the latest blow for the creators of the World Trade Organization, who, in a glow of post-Cold War optimism in 1995, envisioned a world of freer trade, greater market access, and increasing global democracy. So is all of that a thing of the past? Josh joins us now to discuss that. Hey, Josh.
Thanks so much for having me.
Countries have been trading in the past with both friends and foes. So how is what we're seeing now with Russia really all that different?
Well, what's different is the extent to which we're cutting Russia off. So we've seen just incredible sanctions against individuals in that economy. We've seen the crackdown on the oligarchs. We've seen the efforts to cut the Russian banking system off from the rest of the international banking system. Last week, we saw the U.S. move to kind of suspend normal trade relations with Russia, which will mean that tariffs will go up on almost every item that's imported, maybe every item that's imported to the U.S. from Russia, which actually isn't a huge amount. I mean, Russia is a significant importer of oils and some metals, but almost nothing else of any importance comes from Russia. It's actually a relatively small trading partner because it's kind of a relatively poor economy, actually, considering its size. The other point, I think, is that, you know, you've kind of shown the ability to do this to a country that's misbehaving. And so I think a lot of people are wondering if this precedent will apply to, you know, we've seen concerns about human rights in China, or we've seen concerns about civil wars in Africa and, you know, atrocities around the world. And are you going to continue to freely trade with those countries, or are you going to use some of these tools that we've seen are more powerful? And so I think a lot of the question is, will the mechanisms that have been used to throw Russia out of the trading system, will they start being used in other places as well?
So could all of this lead to Russia being thrown completely out of the WTO system?
That's one of the interesting things here. The United States has moved, the Congress is proposing a bill that would require the White House to try to get Russia thrown out of the WTO. It would have to get other countries to agree to this. It's not something the U.S. can do on its own. The WTO was not created with a system to throw any of its members out. And so the move to throw Russia out of the WTO, I mean, it's something that not only has no precedent in WTO history, it's something that has no real precedent in post-World War II history. We've never developed close trade ties with the country and then had to kind of turn around and throw them completely out of this system.
Okay, so that's at sort of the political level, but let's get a bit more concrete. What measures are you looking at that most clearly demonstrate this point that economic fragmentation, not globalization, is what is accelerating now?
Well, one of the really interesting ways that you can look at what's going on with global trade is you can just look at how much trade there is as a share of world GDP. And if you see a chart of this from the 1970s when good data becomes available until about 2008, it was rising really steadily. And when we had the recession following the global financial crisis, trade collapsed pretty significantly. And it never totally recovered. And then it took another, you know, step down during the trade war. It took a hit then, and it started to recover a little bit. And then we had the pandemic, and it started to recover. But now we're having another event that looks like it could be a pretty significant blow to it. And so you kind of put these factors together, and you have an environment where global trade hasn't grown in the past 14 years. And so it's an economic point that kind of shows that this isn't just narrative, that the fundamental kind of economics of what's going on with trade are also in a little bit of retreat right now.
And where could this take us? What could trade look like before long if this pattern continues?
It's a big question, and it's definitely an open debate. There is a chance still that we'll return to these old patterns, and this will look like a series of strange events that, you know, was a step back. But another possibility that I think a lot of people are starting to think about is that we'll see the world fragment a little bit more into giant trading blocks, where there's a lot of international trade kind of among allied countries. The European Union itself is an example where you're seeing lots of international trade among kind of a focused group of countries. And so you could definitely see this world where things fragment into these giant trading blocks.
That was WSJ International Trade Reporter Josh Zumbrunn. Josh, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
And finally, Scotland's leader Nicola Sturgeon has apologized to thousands of women who were executed as witches hundreds of years ago. The apology comes as Scotland considers making misogyny a hate crime. From the first execution in the 1400s to the last in 1727, at least 2,500 people were killed as religious fervor whipped across Europe and North America. However, the purge was especially prevalent in Scotland, where more people per capita were executed than anywhere in Europe. WSJ reporter James Hookway is in Scotland and has more.
Partly it was a way of addressing a historical injustice, but also it's been a way of highlighting the way misogyny works in Scotland and other countries even today. And Nicola Sturgeon was very explicit in laying out her rationale for issuing the apology, saying that, yes, misogyny is still a problem in Scotland today and that everybody needs to take a hard look at it.
And that's What's News for Tuesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.